It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My cup. Pink via Deckel muss es die kleine Bar dem Top. Geht mir kein Sachlin.
Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold. That's right. And this week we have part two of my interview with the incredibly talented Miriam Shore, who is a movie star. And she did my podcast. So there you go. People like me. So much to talk to you about. I will talk more in my rant next week, but I had an amazing trip to Israel, and it was 8 days. It was a mission. We went with a Wider Bridge, which promotes LGBTQ equality in Israel, and we went to, it was fantastic. We went to the LGBTQ centers. I just need to do this just to get this over with. Okay. We went to the LGBTQ centers in Jerusalem, in Haifa, and in Tel Aviv. We went to a shelter in Jerusalem. We met with this mother of a trans kid who's 8 years old, who was fucking amazing, Mindy Levine. I have so much to tell you in the next podcast. The struggle there continues. And, you know, I learned, well, they told us that whatever happens here, like what's happening in Florida, goes right over there. It goes right to Israel, and they're dealing with a lot of the same shit that we're dealing with. But I was at the West Bank. We met with an Israeli and a Palestinian, a rabbi and a Palestinian man, and it was just fascinating. They're trying to build peace by having this community center together where they meet and talk about each other's lives. It was just, I was so fucking tired, though. I have to tell you, Elisa will be like, we were late to every, you know, because we had breakfast at 7 and we left at 8. You know, I'm a comic. 7 a.m. to me is like probably like 4 o'clock in the morning to you, or like 3:30, because some people get up at like 5, which I could never understand. I'm an early morning. I like to watch the sunrise. Not me, baby. I like to watch the sunset and then go on from there. But that's just me, and that's my clock. Speaking of my clock, I am so fucking jet lagged. Both Elisa and I are so goddamn jet lagged. So then, of course, I had to look up the symptoms, and of course, we have every single one of them except for diarrhea, and it's this weird feeling. They say it takes for each hour, difference, it takes a day. So that means I won't be better until Thursday. So I got 2 more days, people. But, you know, just feeling a little off. Good thing the appetite is not big during the jet lag. I just want to sleep, so that's good. But yeah, I'm really jet lagged. I was here when we found out that Orange Fuckface is being indicted. So that was fucking awesome. That was awesome. I still don't believe that he's going to jail, but he damn well should. And these Republicans should be ashamed of themselves. And, you know, this constant comparing to Hillary Clinton did this. Hillary Clinton wasn't president. Okay, she was not the president. She didn't take these documents. I mean, cut the shit. These Republicans, I'm not saying all of them, but the MAGA Republicans, anyone who defends him is really a spineless, racist, psychotic. Yeah, he's a traitor. I can't fucking believe this is, whatever. And he's got like 60-something percent of the, like, they're going to vote for him, these idiots. Yeah, I said idiots, because they're idiots. Such a fuck, whatever. So, all right, so that's that. I'm back from Israel, and Trump got indicted. Oh, I hosted Montclair, New Jersey Pride on Saturday, and it was so much fun. It was exhausting. Yes, I'm exhausted. I'm going to say the word exhausted a lot, so too bad. But it was, there were over 20,000 people there, which was their biggest one yet. And it is the biggest gay pride in New Jersey. So, I hosted. So I worked from about 12 till 7. I got there around 11:15. But yeah, I didn't start working till around noon. You know, the bagels in New Jersey are very good. I stopped and got a bagel. I had a craving. I love pumpernickel. Pumpernickel with scallion cream cheese. Yeah, so I was up and down. I got a lot of steps in. But there were so many incredibly talented people there. I did a little skit with Laura Benatti, who is, you know, she plays Melania on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And so she did Melania. She was Melania, and we did a little skit. And she's just so fucking talented. She's on Amy Schumer's show. She's just so fucking talented and so nice and such an ally to the LGBTQ plus community. So that was really, really fun and exhausting. And I saw podcast guests. Liz Glazer there. She just had a baby, Mazel Tov, with her wife, Karen. And John Fish, brilliant comedian. He was there with his partner, Lee, and their two beautiful children. And yeah, it was, you know, pride is important now because of what's going on. And we should just continue to attack LGBTQ plus people since they have such a major effect on your lives. And your kids' lives, motherfuckers. Watch the Tonys. First of all, this is what I was thinking during the Tonys. I thought, first, these people are so fucking talented. They had no writers, and they pulled that off so well. So then it made me think, A, they're so fucking talented, they don't need writers because they're just so talented. They can just sing and dance, and they don't have to talk. And then I thought, oh, God, now people are going to be like, you know, the Tony Awards were so good without the writers. Why should we pay writers? That's what I kept thinking that they're going to do. And, you know, the writers, I'm in the Writers Guild. It's really not fair. We just want to be paid fairly and treated fairly. And, yeah, I'm going to go picket again. Picketing was fun. It wasn't fun. I mean, it was fun. Yeah, it was fun. So there was that. And then two non-binary actors won for best actor in a play, best actor in a musical, which was, I think that's what it was, but I could be lying. But yeah, it's just like a fuck you to these people who are targeting us because they have, you know, they're losing power and, you know, this way they can, you know, divert from guns and kids being killed all the time. It's really just a diversion tactic. So go fuck yourselves. But, you know, being in Israel and seeing what they're going through, you know, first they're scared for their lives. We marched in the Jerusalem Day Pride Parade, which was a political statement. And there's no people on the side. It was just, you know, cheering us along. It was security. And there were kids on a roof that were giving us the finger, kids. And you know what? That there are also people on their balconies who were cheering us and had pride flags. So, but it was the largest pride march in Jerusalem's history. And it was the whole trip, even though I hate this word, it was very impactful. Check out A Wider Bridge. They're an incredible organization. I'm going to tell you all about it on the next episode, but we met so many people from around the country who, you know, allies, very diverse group of people went on this mission, and it definitely changed me and Elisa. And I brought my CPAP machine on the plane because I wanted Elisa to be able to sleep, but I felt, you know, it's just like, it's so big. And the mini ones are so expensive. But yeah, so I had my CPAP machine in Israel, so I didn't snore. So I did not snore in Israel, except for one night when I pulled it out. And then Elisa was like, you were snoring. And I'm like, well, just wake me up because the fucking CPAP machine is right here. I just pulled it out because it was hurting my nostril. Okay. So that's that. Yeah, lots to talk about. But, you know, I interviewed Miriam before I left, and she's just so fantastic. So I hope you enjoy part two of my interview with the incredible Miriam Shore. I want you to sit back. I want you to relax. And I want you to enjoy yourselves as I speak with Miriam Shore. I want to ask you, you know, you played Yitzchak in, and I know I've watched interviews with you and they don't know how to say Yitzchak, okay? They say Yitzchak. You played Yitzchak and, wait, I got to ring the bell a few times.
Well, for all the spit that came out, you ring the bell.
Yeah, thank you. I got to do both. At that time, you were playing a man. You looked really good, by the way, I have to say.
But I think I'm a hot guy.
You are. You're a hot guy. I have played multiple roles as a woman disguised as a man. And since I'm so tall, I would be on set. And when someone said, that's actually a woman, the people would be like, no, it's not. I swear to God. But I did Shakespeare in the Park. And I did the all-female Taming of the Shrew, and I played a man.
Love it.
And it was, I mean, trans men get this. I mean, I had an assistant who transitioned, and he told me, like, the way people treat him and the entitlement, like, he was blown away after he had top surgery and really, and got some facial hair. The difference in the way people treated him.
Yeah, well, when we did it was the late 90s. And I mean, you know, trans rights were nowhere. We still need a lot of fight ahead of us. But, you know, it wasn't a thing you would say. You know what I mean? And what we were dealing with, John Cameron Mitchell, who wrote it with Stephen Trask, the reason he wanted a woman to play Yitzhak, who is a man, not a trans man at the time, just to, you know, was in order to really explore gender, explore the binary, explore identity. And that's sort of what the show is about. And now I think it's a fantastic show, for sure. But I think it's a show has enough scaffolding to hold any new thing you put on it. So now we've evolved, the conversation has evolved quite a bit, and we can add all kinds of things about gender identity onto it that we just didn't have the language for in the same way at the time.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, you know, you did that then. It was way ahead of its time. Now, I feel like there would be a backlash. Why is she playing him? Why can't you get a non-binary? You know, this is what's happening now. Like, I will never get another part as a woman disguised as a man.
I'm not sure, though, actually. I'm going to push back on that a little because I wasn't playing a trans man. I was playing a man. I was a man, a cisgendered man. And it just so happened that an actress was playing. And I think there is a wonderful opportunity to have Yitzhak being played by a trans man or non-binary or anything. I think that it absolutely can hold that. And same with any of the characters in the show. At the time, that wasn't what we were doing, but I thought it was really valuable what we were doing, which was really just sort of, it was really valuable for me. I thought it was valuable for society and the art world as well, and theater world. But for me, to sort of be able to question identity, gender identity, what that means to me, I felt like, wow, everyone needs to walk through the world as a different gender for a bit to understand, to just open up, to just understand what it does to you because you're treated differently, but you view yourself differently. I know that there's conversations around it. I'm not really afraid of those conversations. I welcome those conversations.
Well, because we know we're on the right side of history. We welcome it because we know we're on the right side. It's the people who are so resistant that don't welcome the conversation.
Right. It's so interesting to me where when there are people who just, I remember I was at a GLAAD.
Yeah.
I was at GLAAD, you know, the GLAAD Awards, and it was wonderful. And Chaz Bono was giving an award or was up there. And a person who was sitting next to me, a gay man, was like, I don't get it. And I was like, what? What do you mean? You don't get what I'm doing? Yeah, I didn't understand what he was talking about. It was like, I just don't get the trans thing. And I was like, first of all.
Right, right.
Don't pull
like,
me
I'm
aside.
On
like,
your I can side. Have, yeah.
What? I'm just like, it doesn't right. really matter if you get. He's still there. So you getting it or not getting it actually is not relevant at all. But it's right. we're all having this learning experience. And I think been a part of Hedvig at that time opened me up in a way that a lot of
yeah,
people
that's
didn't
what
have.
I want. That's what I was trying sort of I getting see. At. That you sort of were given a gift right there as a straight woman.
Yeah. It's so interesting too, because people get so angry if you change your definitions. And I'm like, well, is that really up to person to decide for themselves? Isn't that the conversation we're having right
when
now?
You, like, when a lot of straight people get married, they change their name. They change their name and no one has a fucking problem with that. And when a trans person changes their name, it's like a big fucking problem. It's
so
stupid.
I don't understand that. I'm like, doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, there's so many, I'm so
oh,
tired.
Please.
There's so many other things that we need to fight.
The nitpicking and it's their obsession with genitalia. It's ridiculous.
It's all so fascinating.
Yeah.
And I just think fear is so powerful.
It really is. It's so powerful. I mean, that's why we can't throw our shit out. There's some fear in us not throwing our shit out.
No, right?
You've done so much television. I can't even, but younger was a big thing for you.
It was a big thing because it filmed in New York and it ran for many, many seasons. So
I
just
mean,
that.
It's like you won the fucking lottery.
And I was fully aware of it and grateful and continue to be grateful for that. Like, you know, I just want to be a working actor. I don't need fame and fortune. I mean, I'll take fortune if you want. If you're giving it, I'll take it. But
I want fortune and respect from my peers. That's all I want.
That's what we all want. I think that's the goal. Right? The fame thing, I don't quite understand.
No, there's people who really want the fame. I know. I mean, I'm a comedian. I know a lot of people who just want that fame. And I would rather never worry about money again and have, you know, other people in my industry and other people, period, to respect the work that I do. That's it. That's all I want.
I know. And that to me affords me a little bit of like, I want to live in New York. I'm a New Yorker. My kids are New Yorkers. My family, like, it's just where I want to be.
Right,
I feel a little unmoored. I didn't want to move my family back and forth, as
yeah.
we know I had that experience. That's not really what I'm feeling for my own family. And I just like living in New York. I don't feel like myself so much over in LA. I can have a good time, but I just feel not grounded, literally.
It's also that, you know, I moved back to New York when my ex was pregnant with Henry. And because I knew I wanted to bring my kid up here. And my agents and managers were so pissed off at me because I was really on a roll. But I was like, I'm only here because of my job, which I know a lot of people move for their job. But I can do my job here and raise my family here. And of course, I'm sure, you know, they were so mad at me. They're like, you're on a roll. And I'm like, I'm not as important as the kid. You know, I made some stupid, but I don't think they're stupid now, but yeah.
You have to have your priorities set. Mine was to be in New York. And then I got that job. I feel you completely. It's just kind of how we wanted to do it as a family. And it allowed me to do that. And then on top
right.
of that, I worked with a fantastic cast and writers and crew. And then I got to play this really fun character.
I was going right into this. Like I got to play a total cunt on City on a Hill. And it's so fun.
Have the agency to speak your mind is what's the most fun about it.
Right.
Right? Because I really do care what people think about me. I would love to walk through the world and be like, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. So
right.
I can say that, but it is not Like, I do right. care. Do not think about me.
Yeah.
Too much, probably. But also, I want to be kind. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. You know, I'm an empath in that. Like, I just really care what people Same. Feel when I interact with one. So, you know, I don't have that kind of agency, but it's a safe space to get to play that part. And it's so fun. It's so, so fun. They also made her smart.
Yeah.
You know, she's definitely insecure. All of the foibles in the comedy comes from her deep, deep rooted insecurities rather than her stupidity. She's always smart. She's just blinded by her own insecurities. And that's why she makes really asinine choices when she does and creates comedy. But you know, to be able to play that, also I like playing people who I learn from it, you know, because there's times where she would do things and I'd be like, why does she feel such agency? And I don't.
Right.
You know, or so confident about her actual abilities. But I was like, why am I so namby-pamby about that?
Yeah,
like, why can't I be like, I don't deserve to be in this room and I deserve to be heard.
Right.
Why can't I say that?
Right.
And doing it, your body gets used to it. So then you find yourself in a situation in your real life and you're like, oh, I think I'll just be her. I would do that with Yitzhak too, because I felt physically powerful as Yitzhak.
Yeah, you take up more space. You feel like you can take up more space.
Yeah. And so I would just like get there physically and it would change my feelings around things. So, you know, it's fun as actors, as performers, that we get to experience that.
And
you know,
yeah, that's, the exploration definitely makes you smarter. Hey everyone, did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces, but I live in an apartment and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew, the space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know. It's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome. It's so funny. When we did Shakespeare in the Park and I was playing a guy, we had a choreographer, a body movement person who taught us. They're like, yeah. You're not playing a guy. You are a guy. And they taught us how to walk, how their bodies move. It was really interesting.
I remember doing that when I was, it's like, we didn't have a budget. We were like workshop time. It was just us. Like, but I do remember thinking, okay, well, what are the men or the boys or the guys in my life that I can like think of that remind me of this person? There was one guy in high school who was like super like metalhead guy and he would wear the bandana and the boots. And I remember how he walked down the hallway in high school and he was pretty threatening, but deep down you knew he was just like hurting.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be like, oh, what happened to you? And I remember, like, I would follow people in New York whose body movements, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I want to, what is that? I want to, and I would, like, walk behind him like a creepy stalker
lady.
And just kind of, like, physicality. And you're like, wow, I feel different.
I love
just
that.
Walking through the world. It's so fun. Yeah. And you learn. You learn too. Then you're like, well, why do I walk through the world the way I walk? What am I hiding? What am I protecting? You know?
And it's the same thing that you were saying with Diana Trout, is that like, wait, how was she able to do that? And I can't.
Yeah.
And that's
armor she wears. Well, she literally, some of the jewelry I wore on that show.
Oh
was,
my
I
God, think, those necklaces. Armor. Yeah.
Like that was used in jousting, but no, she's wearing it as a necklace.
Yes.
That's how heavy it was too. No, and just the way, you know, it's so funny too, because some people who know me from that show are like, oh, you're, you know, fashion matters to you and you're this kind of woman. And you see me in my life where I'm just covered in schmutz all the time and like wearing as much as I can. Just gross. I'm saying is I'm gross.
I'm gross too. We should just get together and be gross together on the Upper West Side.
But there are women in the world who do that. There are women in the world wake up and prepare for battle like
yes.
And God bless them, because man,
I don't have the energy.
Wow. No way.
I'm trying to get the fucking audience to laugh at my stupid jokes.
Well, okay, look, now I know we're on the podcast, you're supposed to ask me questions, but I was thinking about, like, I just think you're great. And I was thinking about stand-up comedy.
Mario.
And I mean, a lot of friends who are comedians, and standing up and doing stand-up comedy is just its own thing. It is not a performance like any other kind. And it was one that I've always been afraid of. I have many friends who've done it to great success, or varying degrees, but to some to great success. And I used to do sketch comedy in that world, the underground comedy world in the 90s, which was super fun. Loved it. Yeah, it was amazing. I saw it. It was crazy. But that particular nakedness of being a stand-up comedian, I was like, yeah, no way. That's a fight. I'm like, I put down the weapons and I'm like,
well,
forfeit.
When you're ready, my son, Henry, helped create this all female open mic night. It's every Sunday at like 5 p.m. on the Upper West Side. And if you're ready, it's a safe place to try. I mean, just so you have that experience.
That's literally because in terms of what I like to do is I like to create a character. And obviously you can do that as stand-up. A lot of stand-up comedians have. Yeah. Like, they're not the people that they are when they do their stand-up. But I also, it's lonely.
It's lonely on the road, and it's lonely when you're done.
I want the gang.
Yeah. It's so different. Like, we get off stage, everyone loves us, hopefully. And then you're alone. And it's really, and you go back to the hotel. And when you're a woman, you're really alone.
I was talking to a friend who had seen your show and thought you were fantastic. And I was like, I know, we were kidding about it. And I was like, the strength and fortitude of a female stand-up comedian, period, end of sentence. But the strength and fortitude of a female stand-up comedian in the 80s, 90s, that's a different, was a whole different ball game.
Yeah, I just had lunch with Carol Leifer and we were talking about how fucking different it was.
Thank God. I mean, thank God there are these young women who are doing stand-up now and young people of all kinds and older people who are now starting to start out when they're a little bit old, which I love. And I'm like here for in every possible way. Yeah. Someone who's 15 is like, fuck, you're a stand-up comedian now and they're great. Yes, I love it. It's so fun to see the agency that people have now. People who weren't allowed to have the agency back then, and we're just grabbing it
and taking that mic and being fearless.
Yeah,
I love it. I know we don't have a lot of time left, and I really want to talk about this. You are in a film that's coming out called Maestro, which is based on Leonard Bernstein, and who I have the best story about. Scorsese, Spielberg, Todd Phillips, Bradley Cooper, and Scorsese was going to direct it, and then he did The Irishman, so Bradley Cooper directed it. You play Cynthia O'Neill, who was very close to Felicia, Bernstein's wife, Bernstein, I always get yelled at. And I've loved Leonard Bernstein from when I was a little kid, when he, And
he made that music accessible to young people. That was his goal.
The young people's concerts. Wait, can I just tell my one Leonard Bernstein story? It was like 1986, we're in, it was New Year's. It was either Christmas Eve or New Year's. And we went to the movies because we're Jews on, you know, and we went to the movie by Lincoln Center at the theater. And this guy comes in with another man and he's coughing a lot. And he's sitting behind us. And I say to my ex, like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's Leonard Bernstein. And then all of a sudden, you know, like 3 minutes later, you know how they played music at the Lincoln Center Theater. And so all of a sudden West Side Story comes on and like everyone who was in the audience waiting for the movie to start started laughing. It was just the greatest, you know, he's sitting right there. It was such a New York moment.
Imagine if you composed West Side Story. I don't know what that would feel like. What
if that amazing? Even... Amazing.
I don't even know. I mean, it was really cool to be part of that.
To conduct at the last minute, like, and it's like a total Star Is Born. Like, can you fill in? Okay, now you're an icon.
I was with Bradley when he was explaining this movie to someone, and he was like, "There was this composer named," and I was like, "What? Why do you have to say that?" And then I was like, "Oh, right, because you do have to say that because not everybody knows who that person is." I mean, there's people in the world who don't know who Leonard Bernstein is, and that's okay. And he was talking about the movie, Bradley was, and he was so kind of humble about it because he does every single thing in the movie. I can't even, like...
Yeah.
I was being directed by Leonard Bernstein, so that was pretty
right.
Because he was in the whole makeup and he really inhabited it. It was shocking.
I bet.
It was very cool. It was very New York. Too, because there were a lot of great New York actors we would have these group scenes, like, because the Bernsteins would throw these fabulous parties with all these fabulous people, and you have these really great New York, real, you know, performers now playing these really cool New York people then.
Right.
In and this like, moment.
He was close with Aaron Copland and like all these people, like, I can't.
These were his buddies.
Yeah. Oh, they would go away for the weekend. I mean, okay. So I really wanted to talk to you about this. There's all this backlash because Bradley Cooper wore a prosthetic nose to play a Jew because he's not a Jew. Jew. And now there's all these arguments about that, you know, and this came up at a gig I did the other night at the Jewish Museum. I mean, it's called acting. So I think people can play other characters, but you know, there's a lot of Jews that are like, well, couldn't this one play or that one play it? He has a big nose. Or does he have to have the big nose or the prosthetic nose? And it's such a, it's the same thing we were talking about in the beginning, where does a trans actor have to play that? Or, you know, we're getting into this slippery slope here.
I mean, I think there's a slight, well, I don't know. I don't think I have the authority to speak for the trans community. I do think that I want to see trans actors playing it now
because
I think they bring things that we want to hear. Now we're having this. So I want to see that. I don't want to exclude. The makeup I saw him wear was intense age makeup. It wasn't to make him look Jewish. It was to make him look older. So I don't have a sense that he like put on a big nose to look Jewish. So, you know, that wasn't my experience. My experience was he was playing a character that he had researched and written because he wrote the script too. And it was directing in that he had trained like to learn to do all of the work. So I understand the conversations, though. And I'm not afraid of those conversations. I think people have opinions and people have discussions about it. And I think they're all valuable because I think we're all trying to figure it out. What I participated in was really interesting. And I think it's going to be something unlike anybody's ever seen. So I think it will have a lot
so
of value.
Excited. You must have been pinching yourself.
I was. I mean, look, I think we have. Like, I have to shout. Like, it wasn't the first time I worked with Bradley because I had just finished working on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, where Bradley.
Okay. Guardians of the Galaxy, which you look cray cray in. It's so interesting that you're watching Guardians of, you're watching all the Guardians of the Galaxy with your kids over the pandemic, and you get really into it. You get really, really into it. And then how long after you finished watching it, did you get the call?
So Ruby, my 13-year-old, was like, we're watching every single one of these movies in chronological order.
Right.
And I was like, we're sitting on the couch, nothing else. So I'm in. Let's do it. And we had these fantastic conversations around the mythology that has been created by the Marvel Universe that were deep, that were intense, that I want to have with my kids. So I was like, wow, look at what this can do.
Right? It creates discourse. Great art.
Yeah, if you engage in it with your kids in the right, people are very dismissive of it. And I understand points of view because they're worried that there's not space for other kinds of stories. Right, I understand. Right. But for us, for our family, like we talked about some really deep and important things that because of that mythology that world has, that universe has created. But 2 weeks after we finished watching the entire oeuvre in chronological order, I get a call saying, are you interested in Guardians of the Galaxy? And I was like, interested.
But wasn't that freaky? Don't you think that is so freaky?
It's many. That's a word, right? Yeah, it was. But you know what? It did feel like they were like, oh, you prepped for this exam? All right, let's see how you do. You know, and I just auditioned for it. Like, I'm just an actor.
Right.
No one's like, here's whatever. You know, that's not how it works for me. I have to audition for stuff and whatever. I'm fine. That's what I do. But I felt pretty prepared. And I wasn't necessarily prepared for the enormity of the experience of being in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Which finished. But I'm a nerd. I love sci-fi. I love science fantasy. I love superhero stories and always have. It's part of what made me love what we do. So COVID was tough for everybody, all of us on the planet. And to connect to that part of myself that cares about this stuff on a really pure childlike level, to be able to connect to that, this is why I love doing what I do, and the sense of play I had, felt like such a gift anyway. And then for my kids to finally think I do something cool, forget it.
Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome. Is it weird to play a character that people, you know, can't recognize you from? Is it much different than you know, oh, that's so-and-so from blank, or that's so, you know, that's, she was on Younger and she was, yeah.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier, which is like, I feel like every role I ever play, whoever sees me in that capacity, and that's like how they know me, they just think I'm that. So right. The, like when I was doing this talk, people were like, oh, she's like real butchy, masculine. she can't play. Yeah. And then they would meet me and be like, oh, no, you're a little different.
Actually, I was like, you're very feminine and beautiful. Well, yeah.
Honestly, often got that comment when I would go into auditions when I was doing
everything. Right.
And I was like,
it's
stink. And then with Diana Trout, I'd come in and be gross and schlumpy. And they're like, oh, she's not, she's not, you know, as elevated as Diana is. It drives me a little nuts when casting people are like, no, she can't.
I know. Well, that's the like, curse of the comedian. Like, you know, I've acted. I've always taken acting classes, and they're like, well, and it's like, I'm playing a character. I'm not the way, I don't get up in the morning and I'm like, hey, how's everyone doing this morning? I'm going to make some coffee. Like, it's like, you got to prove yourself.
The better you are at it, the harder it is to convince people you're not that person.
Right.
And you're like, well, so now I'm being penalized for being good at what I did. it's a catch 22.
Yeah.
I love that. And the people, I was on The Americans for a while and I played this very sort of serious.
Yeah, that's right. I had that written, but I was like, I can't do them all.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Fun. And people who know me from that were like, oh, does she do comedy? And they're like, really? Okay. And then people who know me from the comedy would be like, can she do the drama?
I know. Well, it's like, think out of the fucking box like you do with all the men. Okay?
Look, if you just give me a shot to try to convince you, I'll be okay. I'm fine auditioning. It's when they're like, no, you don't even get a shot, that I'm like, okay, well, now I'm pissed off. No, like, no.
I'm getting the signal that we have to wrap up, and I could talk to you forever, but can I ask you two more questions that I always ask?
I feel like a little bit like we're friends that just like hadn't really gotten a chance to hang out yet. Does that make sense?
I know. We need to hang out, and you need to come see my hoarding, and I need to see your hoarding.
We'll be the person that's like, you should definitely keep that. I know it's just a blank slip of paper, but
we should do a show where it's like, we're both trying to de-hoard our apartments, and we have the Nazi, throw that out. And then we're here going, don't throw it out. Oh my God.
I see its value.
Right?
I know it actually looks like trash. So that's a banana peel from the 1980s.
And I could see why you need it. Yeah. Okay. So I asked my podcast guests two things always. One, we're very pro mental health. So what do you do for your mental health?
Well, I'll tell you what I do, especially during COVID, but it helps me all the time. It's walk. I know that sounds weird. I'm not like, hike, or like 9 mile, whatever.
Yeah.
No, you tell me to hike and I already hate you.
Right.
I just like, just walk.
Yeah.
But it saved me. I would walk in circles around like, I just walk. And because as soon as you start moving your body. And what I would do is walk, and this is like goes hand in hand, and then call someone I want to talk to.
Right. How long would you walk for?
I mean, sometimes I only 15 minutes. I'm just going to walk 15 minutes. Like, I just need to walk. I just need to get
it's
it
so
going.
Healthy.
Not so, and it's doable. Anyone can, you know,
or just
get outside, get whatever you can moving to do that. But, and then talking is just like, connect to someone you love, who you know loves you, that can make you laugh or make you whatever, just hear your one sentence you have to say. But I did, in fact, have moments when I would walk in a circle or on a little driveway in this little...
I did that too. I was just like, I have to get out. And yeah. And they said 20 minutes a day is so good for your mental health of just walking.
Would you tell me you have to go to the gym for an hour? I can find every reason in the book not to. But just step outside and walk for a couple minutes.
And it's good for you. It's good exercise and healthy. Okay, so that's number one. You're a walker. Walker and a talker.
Talk to your friend. Like anybody, just call them up.
Do you go to therapy?
I do, but
yeah,
that's
me too.
A little different, right? Like you get something else from talking to a friend because you're reminded that you love people.
Yeah, and you have a connection. Connection.
Yeah, and that is something that matters a lot to me, and friendship is really important. So you keep that going as much as you can. You're going to think, I don't want to bother them. Whatever. They won't answer. They don't want
to. I know. We have, you know, it used to be you had to fucking answer the phone. You didn't know who was on the other end.
And it'd be like, we'll talk on the phone now. Learn. It's a good skill.
Yeah. I like that too.
So how many you need? 3? Because I got another one.
Oh, okay. You can do another one.
No, walk, talk, and then like do one small thing for yourself, whatever it is. Like,
yes.
Because you need to remind yourself that like you love yourself and you matter to yourself.
Right. Like meditate or do something.
Whatever it is. I don't know. Buy yourself a pack. No, whatever it is. It doesn't need to go to a spa for $10,000. We can't all do that. But, you know, something that makes you remind yourself that you're like, oh, I value myself. Oh, me too.
I would love that, the $10,000 spa. Okay. Number two. Now, I named the podcast Kill Me Now because if you know me, everything gets on my nerves where I'm like, I can't take it anymore. Like, it's a 10. And it's getting worse as I get older. So, and the stupidest things piss me off, but they're not really stupid when I think about them. Like, you know, I mean, the mundane is, you know, like, I cannot take the people walking down the street looking at their phone. And then you're walking towards me. And you're not looking, and I'm not moving because you're not fucking paying attention. So I'll put my arms up, I'll go, hello, and my kids get so annoyed with me. Can't you just walk around? No, because they don't own the fucking sidewalk looking at their fucking phone. I'm not adjusting for someone who's not paying attention. Anyway, what pisses you off more than anything in the whole world?
I don't like when people are mean. I think people exert energy to be mean sometimes, and I know it comes from fear or insecurity, blah, 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 blah. They can talk to their therapist about it and spend all that money. I don't need to. It just takes energy to be mean to people that it makes me crazy, though. Like, why? Yeah. What is that? I don't get it. It hurts.
Because you're a miserable fuck who needs attention and a narcissist. And why do you want negative attention?
I don't know why it...
I don't know.
And I think we have a sense, too, that, like, you're cool if you're mean, and you're like a dumb shit if you're nice.
Yeah, you're not.
And I'm like,
you're not. And you know that.
Yeah, that's people who are too scared to like just be a nice person. And we assign some kind of nice. I don't know. You can be a super
because
smart person.
Fall apart.
Yeah, I don't
like,
get it.
You know, Trump is a he's the meanest person in the world, but like, he can't joking about. There's no disarming. You have your armor up and no one wants to be around you, you fucking orange
but
piece of shit.
Stand-up comedy. Like when I respond to an amazing stand-up comedian, it's because they're so goddamn smart and they put it in a way that I'm like, that's just so smart funny. You got me into this place. Why you crafted something? You're just an asshole. I'm like, well, why do that, you know?
Yeah.
Show me dexterity that I can't do, not just like being a dick. I can do that.
Yeah. It's too easy to be a dick. It's too easy. Speaking of dicks, I have to go. I have a meeting and then I'm going to go picket. Have you been picketing for the Writers Guild?
I've been doing the press stuff. So are you kidding? I'm from Detroit and I'm in three unions.
For Galaxy of the Galaxy of the Guardians of the Galaxy of the Galaxy of the Guardians.
This is the real deal. It's a Marvel movie. I'm going to pick it. I mean,
all right, well, let me know, you know, get my number thing from Laura because I sign up on the Writers Guild thing and we could go to one together.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I have it from SAG. I'm also in the DJX. I'm a director as well.
Oh, that's right. You did direct some younger episodes. Okay. I'm sick of you with all your accomplishments, Miriam.
I'm just happy that I got to meet you and that now we're actually friends.
Okay. We are totally hanging out.
Happening.
I'm not kidding because, you know, I have made friends from the podcast.
Good. That's a good reason to have a podcast. Yes.
Yeah. And you live in New York City and you are such a star. Mazel tov on everything. Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be fucking. It's just amazing. You are amazing. I can't wait for Maestro. You're great. You're so great. And you're such a delight. And I can't thank you enough.
Well, I'm rubber, you're glue, as the saying
goes. I'm stuck on you?
Yeah, well, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me, sticks to you.
Okay, I'm in. Thank you so much for listening to Kill Me Now, part two of my interview with Miriam Shore. I hope you enjoyed. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and marketed and everything else by the incredible Brittany Jo Sowards Richmond. We just want to give a shout out to Brittany. Brittany, unfortunately, her father passed pretty suddenly a couple of weeks ago, and we wish her and her family well, and deepest condolences. He was a young guy, David Sowards, and just for everything I've read about him, a great guy, a really great guy, an upstanding citizen, and apparently a good father, because Brittany's pretty amazing. So, and beloved in his community in West Virginia. So rest in peace. I don't even know why I did that. They're so Christian. I don't even know why I hit that. Okay, whatever. Well, his name's David, so that's, you know, David was Jewish. So let me tell you about my upcoming dates. Let me tell you about it now. I am going to be at the Gordon Center for Performing Arts in Maryland, in Owings Mills, Maryland, on June 22nd. So get your asses there. It's right by Baltimore. Then I go to, I'm opening at the Post Office Cafe and Cabaret in Provincetown on the 25th. My show, Everything Hurts Everywhere All at Once. Get it? and I'm going to be at the Montreal Comedy Festival in mid-July between the 18th and 28th. So please come see me. I don't even have my phone. I did take pictures of everyone who was saying that, you know, that they listened to the end. So if you're listening to the end, please let me know, because I'm happy to mention you. I love when you people write to me. It's just, it makes me feel so good. Because as you know, someone actually said, just go to Patreon so you can make some money. But then it's a whole big schmogingle. I made that up. I do this for the love, and that comes from you, because I'm needy and I'm a comedian and we want people to love us. So whatever love you can send my way, I so appreciate it. What else? I don't know. I don't know what else. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Next week, lot to talk about. Lot to talk about. I really thank you. Thank you all for listening. And as we always say, and I want to say that this airs on the 14th. Does it air on the 14th? No, it airs on the 13th of June. And my mother's Yahrzeit, which is the anniversary of her death on the Jewish calendar, is actually on Sunday night at sundown. But she died on June 15th, 2015. And I'm telling you, it's like yesterday. So if you have your mother and if you have your father, you are one lucky son of a bitch. Wait, I'm checking to see if I have the date wrong of my mother's. She died on June 17th. June 17th. I'm sorry. So the anniversary is, I don't know why I always think it's the 15th. Oh, you know, the 15th, you know why? Because that was the last day I saw her. Was June 15th, 2015. I went to visit her. Yeah, so it's, you know, the anniversaries are hard. They're hard. It's hard every day. But it's so interesting because I think about her a lot during this time. And when I was in Israel, I just wanted to call her and tell her all this stuff. And I kept thinking, oh, I got to call. And then you just get it. You're like, no, you can't. So it's kind of hard. So if you have your parents, seriously, you are so lucky, and tell them you love them. And I don't know. I think that's it. I am thrilled that whoever's listening right now, I fucking love you more than anything. And thank you for all your love and support. And in honor of my mother, in memory of my mother, I'm going to do a very special goodbye. I am going to do so long exactly the way she said it. Okay, ready? Thank you so much for listening. And we, as we always say, so long.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.